First Story. 3. Mandy sat at her second-hand computer and punched her information in again. She had to hunt and peck on the keyboard because she'd never learned how to type. The keyboard always confused her anyway. Why couldn't all the letters just be in order instead of scattered everywhere? She brushed a blonde curl away from her face, then tucked it behind her ear when it fell back in front of her eyes. The internet credit check was a first-of-the-month ritual. She only had a few websites bookmarked in Firefox, a free browser, thank goodness, and almost half of them were credit agencies. The other half were articles on getting out of debt. As she'd expected, her credit rating had gone down 2 more points. It was at 514 now, over 200 points down in just over a year. She'd never be able to get a house now, or a car. In a moment of weakness, in the Food for Less break room 8 months ago, she'd confessed to another cashier, Bob, about her credit problems and the nonstop calls from collection agencies that wouldn't listen to her. He'd pointed out that she couldn't afford a new house or car regardless, so what was the big deal? His advice was to ignore the calls. After all, he'd said, once you're at the bottom, what else can they do to you? The collection agencies kept calling, however, and made it clear that it was a very big deal. She believed them. They wouldn't be this mean for nothing, after all. They insulted her and refused to listen to anything she said. All the articles said to talk with creditors about payments, and they made it sound so easy, but the men and women on the phone just threatened to call her parents and her grandmother and tell them what a deadbeat she'd become. Once, she had to hang up because they made her start to cry. Her mother did not raise a deadbeat daughter. Mandy didn't want her mom thinking of her as one of those people. Those people were the ones who'd broken the economy and driven banks out of business. The liberals who thought they could spend as much as they wanted and never pay their debts. Mandy wasn't one of them. She'd just gotten careless and hit a bad patch. That's what her mom always called it.
Mike, down at the store, he hit a bad patch after his wife died.
The key, of course, was that people lifted themselves out of a bad patch. She'd been trying, but there were too many fees and the interest rates were suddenly much too high. No matter what she did, things just got worse. Her bad patch had become a rough spot in the road, and the rough spot had become a hole she'd fallen into. A week after her confession, Bob gave her the computer as a favor. Mandy knew what it meant when a man in Los Angeles offered a favor. One of her neighbors from downstairs, Veek, had done a bit of work on the machine and declared it internet usable. Mandy was pretty sure the woman had added in 2 little green cards and done something to the memory or the processor or some computer thing. At the time, Mandy worried Veek might also expect something for her favor. After all, she was from Europe or Asia or someplace, and they were a lot looser when it came to such things there. Mandy wasn't sure she could do something like that with another woman, but 6 months had gone by and Veek had never asked for said payment. Mandy wasn't sure what a score of 514 was or what was used to calculate it, but she knew it was very, very bad. She stared at the 3-digit number for a while and realized she'd spent 10 minutes lost in thought. The credit score check was supposed to be a quick thing. She was going to miss her bus. She grabbed her shirt and jeans from the bed, decided she didn't have time to change, and crammed them into the canvas shopping bag she used as a purse. Showing up in a sundress would mean the manager leering at her and accidentally walking into the bathroom while she changed. She'd have to deal with it. It was her own fault for getting distracted. She opened the door to her apartment and almost ran into a bookshelf. It stretched across the hall at an angle. The man at one end of the bookshelf was on the thinner side of average and had a mop of brown blonde hair. He needed a haircut. The other man was stout and bald with a devil beard. "Sorry," said the haircut-needing man. "Just moving in, I'm your new neighbor." He balanced his end of the bookshelf on one hand, dropped his keys into it, and held out the other hand. "Nate Tucker." Mandy ignored the hand and locked the door behind her.
"Hi," she said. "Sorry, I'm late for work."
She slipped past the bookshelf and dashed down the hall.
"The people here are so warm and friendly," said the bald man.
"I'm sorry," she called back over her shoulder. "I'm going to miss my bus."
She ran down the front stairs. It was an awful first impression, she knew. Her mom used to bake cookies for new neighbors. Then again, her mom had never lived in Los Angeles. Hopefully Nate Tucker wouldn't be another one of those neighbors.
"Hot neighbor," said Nate as her footsteps faded down the stairs.
"Could make up for the parking." Sean, his soon-to-be former roommate, shook his head.
Believe me, even if you end up sleeping with her, it won't be worth the hassle of street parking.
Nate had passed the credit check on Monday afternoon and his check cleared Thursday morning. It had wiped out his savings and meant that he was paying rent on two places at once for the month of April, but it was his. He turned the knob and opened the door of his new apartment.
"Here it is," said Nate.
"Damn."
Sean stared out the window at the observatory.
"That's some view. Tell me about it. You lucked out finding this place."
"I know.
Parking still sucks, though."
They headed back down to the street where Sean's pickup held the rest of Nate's furniture. The next bookshelf went up faster now that they knew the staircase. The entertainment center was small enough to go up with no problem, despite its weight. They moved the desk into the lobby 20 minutes later and paused to adjust their grips. As they did, a solid-looking man with dark curls came out of the hallway carrying a box of his own. He glanced at the desk.
"You moving in?"
"Yeah," said Nate. He set his end back down and held out his hand.
"Nate Tucker, I'm moving into number 28.
"Carl,"
the other man said. He tucked the box under his arm and shook the hand.
"Moving out of 5.
"Really?"
Carl nodded.
"If I could have afforded it, I would have broken my lease months ago."
He looked around at the wood and plaster walls.
"Wasn't even here 6 weeks and I was ready to go."
"Was it the parking?" asked Sean.
"I told him the parking was going to suck." "The parking sucks," Carl agreed. "But it's just this place. It gets on your nerves. I never felt comfortable here, no matter what I did. Never got a good night's sleep."
Nate felt his stomach sink a few inches. "Is it loud?"
"No, it's not a comfortable place, you know? I never felt good here. Do you believe in that feng shui stuff?"
Nate and Sean both shook their heads. Carl's lips twitched into a smile.
"Neither do I. But it's the best way I can think of to explain it. The place just feels off. Living here was like putting your foot in the wrong shoe. It's just wrong."
He shook his head again.
"Sorry. This is a shitty welcome for you."
"No," said Nate. "I'd rather hear about it now than learn it the hard way." Carl shrugged.
"There are tons of perks to staying here if you like it. The sun deck up on the roof is awesome. Check out the Mexican place up the street. The Thai place on the corner is pretty good, too, if you ask them to make stuff hot."
He shifted his box back into his arms.
"Good luck."
He headed out through the door. Nate and Sean got the desk up to the second floor. While they swung it around to the next flight of stairs, Sean said,
"Man, I'm glad I'm moving back to the Bay."
Nate hefted his end of the desk.
"Why's that?"
"I won't be here to help you move out in 6 months."
"He's overreacting. Some people just don't like some places."
"Like your neighbor who was running to get out of the building."
"Late for work."
"Whatever," Sean said.
The futon took 2 trips. They wrestled the floppy mattress up all 3 flights. The frame was the worst of all. It twisted just enough to hinge open, and the clang of metal was painfully loud in the stairwell. They almost lost it on the landing between the 2nd and 3rd story when it unfolded again.
"Thank God that's over," said Sean as they set the frame down in the center of the apartment.
"Still the boxes," said Nate.
"Didn't you say there was an elevator?"
"Yeah, maybe they've got it fixed." They walked out to the elevator door. Next to the frame was a pair of stubby push buttons, the type where pushing one button in levered the other one out.
They'd been painted over several times, and their edges had long since become ripples in the latex.
Nate tried to twist the undersized doorknob, but it refused to turn. He shook it harder, and the door rattled in its frame. Sean yawned.
"No elevator?"
"Guess not." Nate pressed his face against the glass and shielded his eyes from the hall lights. The space behind the glass was pitch black. There was no way to tell if he was looking at the elevator car or the shaft.
"You are the ones who have been making all the noise?"
A man stood by the stairs, half silhouetted by the light pouring through the hallway window. He was short, bald, and round.
"Yeah," said Nate. "Sorry about that."
The man nodded once.
"One of you is Mr. Nathan Tucker."
"That's me." He nodded again.
"I am Oscar Rommel."
His accent turned the S into a Z and emphasized the K.
"I am the building manager."
"Nice to meet you."
"Nice to meet you," he parroted.
He stepped into better light and features appeared on his face.
He had bushy eyebrows and a mustache like a comb. The hairy arms hanging out of his wife beater were thick with slabs of muscle that had gone soft. Nate guessed the man was pushing 60.
The elevator does not work.
Ah, Tony said they might have it fixed by now.
It has never worked, said Oscar with a snort. I have been here 23 years, 19 as manager. The elevator has never worked one day.
Rommel, said Sean. That's German, isn't it?
Oscar rolled his eyes.
Yes, I am a German named Rommel, so therefore I must be the grandson of the tank commander. And his last name is Tucker, so he must be the grandson of the man who made the car.
Sorry, said Sean. No offense meant.
Don't mind him, said Nate. Repeated testing has proved he's an idiot.
Oscar snorted again, but his lips bent into a smile.
You will like it here. It is a good building. Your room has the best view. If you need anything, I am in room 12, downstairs in the front. Please do not knock after 6 except for emergencies.
Great, said Nate. Thanks a lot.
The manager gave another sharp nod and lumbered back down the stairwell.
No elevator then, said Sean. How many boxes you got in the bug?
Maybe a dozen, nothing too heavy.
Before the unloading began, Sean went to the corner store and bought a bag of chips and a six-pack to christen the empty refrigerator. It took 5 more trips to empty the Volkswagen. They sat on the couch and each drank their second beer.
I think it's going to be a nice place, said Nate.
Yeah, said Sean, gazing out the window. It's pretty cool. That it for today?
I'm going to try to organize some of this and then maybe head back later for another load of boxes. If I can get 2 or 3 loads tomorrow, that should be everything.
We can load up the truck again, get it all in one go.
Nah, you've done enough, man. Besides, you haven't even started packing your own stuff.
Yeah, about that, Sean said. If I help you with another load, can I have your boxes?
He chuckled.
Sure, organizing can wait. You staying here tonight?
Nate looked around the studio. Hadn't really thought about it. But yeah, it's that or sleep on the floor back at the house.
He slapped the futon twice. The bare mattress kicked up a little puff of dust. He looked at his former roommate and shrugged.
Sean sighed.
Then you're moved out.
Guess so.
I'm left alone with the lovebirds for another 2 weeks, a third wheel in my own home.
He set his bottle down on the empty bookshelf and pulled out his phone.
Come on, I can have a farewell pizza waiting for us by the time we get back over there.
Nate locked up and they headed back to the stairwell.
Hell,
said Sean.
Nate looked around. What? Sean pointed at the door marked 23. The door had a lock plate with a small socket above it, but there was no sign of a doorknob.
Crap, Nate said. Did we knock it off?
Maybe they're doing work in there, said Sean. Easy way for the crew to lock it, just take the whole doorknob.
Maybe.
Nate looked up and down the hall.
Not the best thing for my first day, if we did it.
The entertainment center's pretty solid, could have whacked it right off.
Sean shook his head.
I didn't do it, and I didn't hear you do it.
Quietly away then?
I think so.
They headed for the stairwell.